Nice stuff. There we go. That straight jacket fits. If I were you. And a good morning to you, Margaret.
Hi.
Hi. We've got you to air. Woo.
Yeah, it worked.
Excellent. How is it in Melbourne this morning?
Really cold.
Is it?
Yeah.
Like?
Yeah.
Oh. What time is it? What time is it there?
6:30. No, you know, getting up to 6:45. That's okay.
Oh, shit. We're right ahead, aren't we?
Yeah, 2 hours. 2 hours ahead. But, like, that's not too bad, really. It's totally manageable. But, yeah, when I moved to Australia, I thought that I was going to move to somewhere warm. I think a lot of people labour under this delusion. But Melbourne's not that much warmer than Christchurch. Maybe pretty similar. So, yeah. Anyway, if anyone's considering moving to Australia or to Melbourne, then, you know, definitely pack your woolies.
Yeah. Okay. That's a really good tip there, Maggie. Hey, anyway, so you're busy. And so you're working at the Age, and also your project at the moment, of course, is putting together the Shane Carter movie, One More Chord.
That's right. Life in One Chord. That's right.
Yeah.
Yes. So I took long service leave off my job, which is a cool thing you get here, and I went in to the edit with a great editor called Patrick McCabe, who works in Melbourne, and yeah, we've got to the end of a rough cut, so like it's a wee way off release, probably a year or so, but in terms of having like a whole lot of footage and a whole lot of archive and all of these kind of things and interviews, you know, it's a massive step to get to a point where there's actually something that, you know, people can see.
Yeah, excellent. Just tell us a little bit about, like, how did you get to this point of working on this project? Like, what inspired you to do it?
Well, I made a documentary a few years ago called Into the Void about the legendary Christchurch band, which is something that I did with my friends. We all did it together, and the idea was just to make something that we really liked and not really worry about too much about funding or getting paid or any of those things. And, you know, for a film that cost like pretty much nothing to make, it did well in terms of that people liked it, which was cool. And then I moved to Australia and I kind of just had to get set up here, which took quite a while. I really wanted to do another project, and I, like many people, have always been really interested in New Zealand music, and I've always really loved Flying Nun ever since I was a teenager. It was important to me because, you know, when I liked that kind of music, I discovered there was all this great stuff that came from just up the road, basically. Or I should say just down the road, is some of it's from Dunedin, and a lot of it was from Christchurch. So I was always interested in it. And something that I know people know in New Zealand, but I can't reiterate this enough, it's got a huge impact over here.
Right.
Like, people really, in a kind of, you know, live music indie world, Flying Nun is very significant here and in the States, and I guess in England too, though I don't know so much about that. But anyway, so I wanted to do something, and I'd come across Shane, and I knew John Coley, who was the drummer in Straight Jacket Fits and also in the Double Happy, one of Shane and John's early bands. And we got to chatting, and I said, oh, well, I want to make something. And I wrote to him and I said, you know, I don't really want to make something that's like a normal documentary where you have people, rock documentary, where you've got people going, you know, Henry Rollins comes out and says what he thinks of like what the band sounded like and goes, they're so great, they were so amazing. Now, I find that really boring.
Yeah.
I know that that's fine. It's a standard form and lots, and it's me good about it, but I didn't really want to make something like that. So the idea behind this was that we let the music speak for itself. We let, you know, people tell their stories, but we don't really go down those kind of, well-travelled pathways in the documentary. So, yeah, he was into that idea, and then we did some filming. Of course, one of the main reasons why it happened was because he was writing his book.
Of course, yes.
So we filmed with him before the book was released, and then again a few times afterwards. And, yeah, so we kind of got that process on film. And the whole film is really based around that book, and a lot of it is taken directly from the book, because for people who've read Shane's book, dead people I have known, and a lot of people listening will have read that book.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good book.
It is a good book. I'm up to page 46.
Oh, yeah.
I just keep like looking at the photos.
yeah. Well, it doesn't. These young people, they're not hard on the eye. doesn't hurt. And also just stories about all of those kind of times are really fun. I mean, it sounded like people were having a real blast back then, in the early days. But I mean, I think it's important to say that this isn't just about that, because Shane's had a huge career, long lifetime career. It's hard to be a lifetime musician in New Zealand, hard to keep going, and he's done
it. Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, all power to him.
Yeah, so you say the early years, so what sort of period is that?
Early years, I guess, is Flying Nun. So I think we're talking about basically the early 80s. So sort of like 80 to 86 kind of time is the time when a lot of stuff was happening. We've got some interviews with Chris Knox where he talks about it very articulately. But, you know, he says the real kind of fervent period was really only sort of, I think, 8 years long, when there was just a lot of bands happening. And why that happened is a good question, which is something that we try to cover, because it is an interesting thing. You know, what happens when there's a music scene that just seems to jump? And, and of all places, the South Island of New Zealand, like, you'd think that would be the last place where something like that would happen, but it did.
Well, I guess it was sort of pre-internet, pre-digital age, so...
Yeah.
What else are you going to do?
Yeah, well, that's right. Like, I mean, you know, I don't want to get on the case of the internet, because I think, you know, it's offered so much, particularly for musicians. In terms of that, like, you can actually make, release your music all on your own. You don't need music companies. And a lot of that record company stuff was pretty gross.
Mm.
And it still is, but, like, it's pretty gross. And we'll get into that a bit as well. But, yeah, like, not a lot of distractions. So you've got to make your own fun, and, you know, playing in bands is a great fun thing for a young person to do, or an old person, anyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also, I think a really big thing that maybe doesn't get talked about so much is that the kind of cultural landscape at that time, when New Zealand was quite it's not repressed, but, like, it was very, there was a lot of sort of social structures, and, you know, neoliberalism came in and loosened everything up, but back then, and then there was, of course, Robert Muldoon, who was, like, really divisive character in the Springbok tour.
That's
and
right, Shane, yeah.
And all of those people talk about, there was a lot of, it was a real, like, they call it a cultural war, there was a lot of violence, you know, at those shows. I was talking to this guy who came from Brisbane here, and he's like, I always think of Flying Nun as being this really kind of sweet music where everyone's really happy. Didn't think that it came from a place of division and violence, and but that is actually true.
Yeah.
So that's, I reckon, and that's something that is a really important kind of part of that. But you know what? Like, all those people who are involved in that scene are still around, so they can talk about it a lot better than I can. They were there.
Yeah, well,
Shane,
that's right.
Can talk about it,
and it's good to get them now while they are still here.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, well, that's right. I mean, like, a lot of people who played in that music scene, and I'm not saying all, but a lot are not very well.
I know. Sure. Yeah. And it's good to just sort of capture the history while you can.
I think it's really important. And I think it's a history that, while it's recognised, I don't think it's recognised as much as it should be.
Yeah. So what can, when can we expect the, I guess, the result, the outcome?
Well, I mean, when it comes to stuff like this, everything's an idea until it's done.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't say exactly, but I think we'd be looking at about a year away at this stage. And that sounds like a long time, but we've got a rough cut, so we need to do a fine cut, and then we need to do a sound mix. We want to get composed music for the film. Ideally, Shane would do that, depending on how busy he is or if he's up for it. Then organise the release. But the release is kind of part of the whole project, because if someone like me or anyone makes a documentary in New Zealand and you put it into cinemas, the kind of truth of the matter is that no one will go.
Yeah. Sad but true.
Sad but true, right? Like, especially something that's quite niche. I mean, there's interest. There's definitely an audience, but it's still niche. Not going to, you know, this isn't going to be a film that's going to be like, you know, Megan or one of those big kind of blockbusters. So what I have observed, as like everybody else, is that people go to live shows, right? Like they'll go and see a band play or a show that's going through.
Yep.
So I figure why not release this as a live show? So when we show this film, when it's released, you won't actually be going to the cinema. You'll be going to, like, you know, a theatre, like, and it'll be a live show, so you'll see live music with it. What form that takes is all still, you know, in train. That'll be how it is. So it'll be like, I want to call it an extravaganza.
Nice. That sounds awesome. Where do you think that, like, where will that be? Like, the release, the opening?
Well, I would still like to do film festivals. Obviously, I live in Melbourne, so I have my eye very much on the Melbourne Film Festival. But that whatever happens, there will be guaranteed to be a tour around New Zealand. So all of the main centres will definitely have this film playing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds amazing. Awesome stuff. And, like, there's a King Loser. Have you heard about that? Like, the King Loser? Yeah. A doco. And so that's going through the film festival as well, coming up.
Yes. Well, the New Zealand Film Festival, it's like they've got they seem to be more open to, like, music docos now, which is really cool.
It seems like that you may have broken that mould with the Into the Void documentary. Would that be a fair call?
Yeah, well, like, you know, when we released Into the Void, they didn't put it into the New Zealand Film Festival. It got one showing in Christchurch.
Yeah.
And I was pretty annoyed about that because I sort of thought, well, you know, like, this is a New Zealand film and this is a New Zealand Film Festival. You'd think that there would be some sort of interest, but they have their reasons because they have to make money and all those kinds of things. The head of the New Zealand Film Festival at that time said to me, you've made a really interesting film. And I was like, oh my God, is that like the worst backhanded? It's not even a compliment. It's actually almost an open insult. But, like, yeah, I think that whole attitude has changed a bit now. And he's sadly passed away. So, like, you know, I think the whole world has shifted a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, like, if you've made a film, like, lots of films are getting released into streaming platforms now. Like, the whole thing's changed, so, you know, you've got to kind of be, film festivals have to change too. But yeah, King Loser, I'm real excited about it. Can't wait to see that.
Yeah, no, that sounds cool. Hey, now what about songs? What's your kind of, have you got a track for us today? Like, Double Happy Straight Jacket Fits or a Shane Carter number?
Well, I can tell you that I've been listening to a lot of all of those bands, and Dimmer, of course. We're listening to, and yeah, like, there's some great stuff, but, like, why don't we go back to the Double Happy?
Yep.
And I think the one I chose was Needles and Plastic. That's, like, a pretty classic one. So, yeah, let's play that.
Absolutely. So, and it's, here we go. This is a Double Happies with Needles and Plastic. This is taken from the album Nerves. Awesome stuff, Maggie. Have a great day.
Oh, thanks. You too.
Yeah. Thanks for chatting to us today.
No.
Look forward to seeing this live doco coming through.
Beautiful.
Awesome. Cheers.